July 17th, Hubert Laws, July 20th, Hiroshima, July 24th, and Sheila E., July 30th. Details at thebirchmere.com.
I'm Kamaya.
I'm Amira.
I'm Kaya.
I'm Kamaya.
And you're listening to WPFW Washington.
Another man done gone. Another man done gone from the county farm. Another man done gone.
Huh? I don't know. What? I'm just going across the street.
Shut your mouth.
Oh, no. What'd I do?
Turn around. Put your hands behind your back. Let's go.
The jury of your peers having found you guilty. 10 years.
Come on. Get that set.
I was in jail, too, man. It's cold-blooded in the jail. You go down there looking for justice. That's what you find. Just us.
Welcome to another edition of Crossroads Today. Now here's your host, Roach Brown.
Good morning, and welcome to Crossroads. We come to you every week at the same time. We got an echo. Every week at the same time. We come to you the first Tuesday of each month live from Ben's Chili Bowl on Historic U Street in Washington, D.C., and as usual, we have an interesting show lined up for you for this morning. But before we start, we always open up with what we call the grapevine. Information that you can use. The grapevine. Hey, cruel and unusual punishment. When states don't provide air conditioning in prisons, 13 states in the hottest part of the country lack universal air conditioning in their prisons. Air conditioning has become nearly universal across the South over the last 30 years, with one exception, in prisons. Although 95% of households in the South use air conditioning, including 90% of households that make below $20,000 per year, states around the South have refused to install air conditioning in their prisons, creating unbearable and dangerous conditions. Many people in prison are especially susceptible to heat-related illnesses, as they have certain health conditions or medications that make them especially vulnerable to the heat. Also, cooking someone to death. Southern states resist calls to add air conditioners to prison. Both inmates and prison guards say the sweltering conditions are not only inhumane, but make the facilities much more dangerous for everyone. Of course, there's an easy, if costly, solution, installing air conditioning, but politicians across the conservative South have repeatedly balked at forking over tens of millions of dollars to improve conditions for a population that garners little public sympathy from their constituents. Recent efforts in both Texas and Florida to allocate major funding to address the issue have sprouted due to resistance from lawmakers. The end result, the vast majority of facilities remain without air conditioning in many states. Roughly three quarters of Florida's prisons lack air conditioning, according to Florida Department of Corrections. Both inmates and prison guards say the sweltering conditions are not only dangerous and inhumane, but make the facilities much more dangerous for everyone. Men and women who are incarcerated in these situations, where their bodies are hot, they can't get cooled down, and they get frustrated. Excuse me. The deadly heat in the Texas prison is killing us. Prisoners look upon the summer months in the Texas Department of Correction with dread and trepidation, for one is accurately aware that one may not survive another summer. Many do not. The deadly heat in Texas prison is killing us. One of the prisons used a 10-gallon water cooler to place in the living area under the lock and key during the summer months. This 10-gallon cooler must provide cold water for 84 inmates, which it never does. An inmate can expect to get 1 8-ounce cup of water every 4 hours. Moreover, ice for the cooler is only provided twice a day, and the ice frequently melts before the hottest part of the day. Why not put cold water fountains in the inmates' living area so the inmates are assured a drink of cold water when they need it the most? Those inmates fortunate enough to buy a fan from the prison commissary are able to get a slight breeze in their cells while poor inmates are defenseless in this scorching, burning heat. And that's been what we call the grapevine, briefly for this morning, the grapevine. Our guest for this morning is an interesting topic. We're talking about trauma in the Black community with Dr. Damon Hope, a traumaologist. We've heard from various sources that trauma is everywhere, and the impact that trauma is having on our community has been devastating. And we have a gentleman who's been traveling around the country as a traumaologist, a licensed a doctor, and he has a tremendous history and track record all across the country, in fact, around the world. Dr. Holt is a national trauma expert, a certified traumaologist. He is the host of The Unbreakable Show, which is a podcast about trauma, mental health, and integrative medicine. Dr. Holt is the founder of the Trauma Center of Hope and Integrative Medicine. And that's been what we just talked about, the introduction for Dr. Damon Holt. Good morning, Dr. Holt. How are you doing?
Hey, good morning to you. I hope you can hear me.
I can hear you, and Merry Christmas to you, buddy.
You early.
No, it's in your heart, man. It's in your heart. You'll find out why we say that, say it a little later on. But right now, we had you scheduled a few months ago. We weren't able to pull it off.
Yeah.
And we wanted to make sure you get back, because this caught us by surprise. I didn't know that trauma is such a big issue and crisis within our community. Tell our audience a little bit about yourself, then we get right into the trauma piece.
All right. Yeah. So thank you, Mr. Brown, for having me. Truly, it's a blessing to be here and to share, to bring awareness. My name is Dr. Damon T. Holt. I'm a traumatologist, trauma crisis specialist. I'm a board certified integrative and functional medicine practitioner as well. I travel throughout the nation, speaking on this topic on trauma. I'm an author of 18 books on trauma. A lot of my books is on Amazon. And I have a few more books coming out speaking in that space. And you're right. So a lot of my work is in the educational system. Usually you find me in failing schools, challenging schools, schools, what we would say, unquote, the hood. Schools that are underperforming academically, that is truly being overwhelmed by challenging behaviors, which comes from a lot of childhood traumas. Mm-hmm. A lot of my work is also in foster care, the justice system, justice impacted individuals as well. I did research on asking the question, what does prison do to the brain of inmates? It do a whole lot, actually. I did a research on the traumatization of incarceration.
Say that again, the traumatization of incarceration?
Traumatization of incarceration.
Okay.
And which is real, because what we began to see is that our brothers and sisters who have been in prison or just as impacted, when they were released in prison, they didn't only need a house and they didn't only need employment. They needed a lot of mental health therapy and mental health support, because being incarcerated in a culture of animal-like behavior that's dehumanizing and demonizing, inmates come out having paranoia, struggle with schizophrenia, anxiety, depression, and sometimes post-traumatic stress disorder known as PTSD. So the struggle is certainly real. Why do I do the work? Number one, I feel like I was called to do it. I don't think that this is just something I just chose to do. I felt trauma is something we really need to look at. And then I think as a Black healthcare professional, I thought it was even more important to somebody that look like us start speaking into our communities, our spaces, from an unapologetic standpoint. I'm a national and a global trauma, well-respected trauma expert. Just came from Rome speaking on, is it possible to be leading and bleeding at the same time? Leading and bleeding at the same time. What I come to realize is that many of our leaders in our communities, whether that's principals in schools, executives and CEOs in corporate America, or our pastors and bishops in churches, are leading and bleeding, which means that the chronic secondary stress of secondary trauma from the work is impacting our leaders as well. So let me delve back and unpack a little bit. Why is trauma important to me? Based on my work, Mr. Brown, I'm going to tell you that trauma is America's new public health emergency. That's what we are in. The reason why now you're hearing so much trauma going on is because it is a public health emergency. In my research, it tells me that we are in a public health crisis. 10, 20 years ago, trauma used to be a mental health issue, used to be a behavioral health issue. But I'm telling you right now, it's bigger than that. It's a public health issue.
Why do you say that?
When we have 70 to 80% of the world's population, whether if you are in the United States or if you're in other areas of the world, 70 to 80% of the human population have experienced at least one major traumatic experience in their life. That's more than half of the world's population.
Wow, 70 to 80%?
70 to 80% of the world's population have suffered from at least one traumatic experience. Number two, one out of four children have experienced some type of childhood trauma and is struggling with unresolved childhood traumas today. What we need to know, one out of five people in America have at least one undiagnosable mental illness in their lives. I still think if we really unpack that a little bit more, I think those numbers may be even more concerning because a lot of people don't see therapists and a lot of people don't go to their doctors. So I'm quite sure that those numbers may be a little bit more concerning. When we look at society issues, we have not looked at it in a deeper level to link it to a root cause. Bring it to the root causes is going to trauma. You can't fix poverty when root causes of poverty come from trauma. You can't fix crime in the hood until you start dealing with people that have unresolved trauma, communities that have unresolved trauma. You can't fix family breakdowns that we're seeing until we deal with the traumas that has impacted in the family structure.
Let me interrupt you a minute. What exactly is trauma? For those folks, what is trauma?
That's a good question. So according to the American Psychological Association, trauma is a psychological wound and an emotional injury to the brain. That simply means that when traumatic events happen to us, it doesn't just impact the brain. It also can rewire the brain to where certain traumatic events are so atrocious and so painful that it actually changes the person. Trauma is an emotional wound and a psychological injury. And then thirdly, I would add to that is that trauma is a stress that is so overwhelming, you have a difficult time coping with it. So regular stress and trauma stress is two different things. Like I get stressed every time I go to the D.C. area dealing with y'all horrible traffic, right? So that brings on some stress, right? But it's not necessarily trauma stress. Now, it can turn into trauma stress if I am in your D.C. traffic and I'm involved into a fatal car accident, right? So now that stress get more on the traumatic side, right? So think of the root word of trauma means a wound anyway. So let's not get really deep with it, right? The root word of trauma means wound. If you go to the emergency center, you get in a bad car accident, you got a concussion, and they have to put you on and do surgery or put you into a induced coma so that we can reduce the swelling in the brain, that's trauma as well. So trauma is really a wound. So when we're talking about it from a psychological, emotional aspect, it's really just a psychological wound or injury that happens in the brain. But the danger is, it's just what happens to a wound if you don't treat it. Well, it turns into an infection. It gets worse. So this is where we began to see mental illness and psychiatric disorders, because most of that is coming from unresolved, untreated, unidentified trauma, right? And then PTSD, which is post-traumatic stress disorder, is more of a condition that comes from the root cause of trauma, right? So now we have a diagnosis that we can label as a condition that when you have been through some severe deep layers of trauma or complex trauma, then it can actually turn into a condition as post-traumatic stress disorder, right? So these are the things when we're talking about it from a general sense. And then you have different subgroups of trauma, like acute trauma, and you have chronic trauma and complex trauma, generational trauma, historical traumas, right? So there's all kind of different subgroups when we start talking about these areas of trauma.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask a question, please?
Come on.
This is Nikichi. What about trauma, transgenerational or intergenerational trauma, or the trauma that travels in the genes, the epigenetics? Can you speak to anything along those lines? Because you know what I'm getting at, and I'm going back to the enslavement period, and the trauma that our ancestors experienced in Jim Crow apartheid era, and all the way down through today, mass incarceration, which you're talking about. But talk about intergenerational, okay, and if that is something, and this whole thing about the trauma traveling through your genes.
Yeah, so you got a little ahead of me, but yeah, you're exactly right. So let's go a little bit, let's unpack that a little bit more from a traumatologist's perspective. Trauma impacts the whole person. So I think that's where we start at, right? How does that impact me? We know it impact communities, it impact families. I'm doing some new research on trauma is the new leading cause of divorce in marriages as well. So a lot of time we look at infidelity and we look at poor communication, but those are all manifestations of unresolved trauma. And I'll talk about that a little later. But trauma impacts the whole person. Number one, it impacts your neurology, which is your brain and nervous system. Two, it impacts your psychology, which is your mind and your emotions. Three, it impacts your physiology or your physical, which is your body, your healthy organs, your gut system, your gastrointestinal system, insomnia, your circadian rhythm, that's physical. Fourthly, it impacts your spiritual, which means trauma can get so deep, it impacts brokenness in the spirit of a person. And then fifthly, this is what you're talking about, is it impacts our biology, which is it impacts our genes, how it expressed in DNA. So let's unpack that a little bit. So when we talk about it impacts a whole person from a neurological perspective, it impacts your amygdala, which is your fear center, impacts your prefrontal cortex and a frontal lobe. This is where you make decisions, make choices. So this is a link to why we see a lot of kids that are the school to prison pipeline that is real, because of the fact that they start entering into justice systems at very young ages, because our frontal lobe has been hijacked from how we make choices. We're in from survival mode. So we don't make those best choices because the frontal lobe has been hijacked. So that's on the neurological, your sympathetic nervous system that creates that fight or flight arousal. Is also what we would consider on that neurological side. Psychological is the most definite impact our mind, our emotions, how we feel, that brokenness, the mood disorders that come from depression and anxiety. It impacts our physical, right? So physiology, which means, which I see, people have a lot of trauma, also have a lot of chronic inflammation in their body. They have horrible gut health, so they have a lot of food sensitivities just because of trauma stress. We also see that in our communities, where we have a lot of trauma stress as well, it pushes up your glucose levels. So we see a lot of borderline diabetes, type 2 diabetes. We also see fibromyalgia, we see chronic pain. So a lot of that is on the physical. Spiritual is most definitely breaks down our self-value, our self-esteem, how we feel about ourselves, because we're not healed from a lot of trauma. Fifthly is biology. This is what you talked about, the biological impacts of trauma, which is epigenetics. Yes. So we have experienced a lot of our traumas because it was inherited into us before we were even born, because great-great-grandmama's dysfunctions wasn't addressed. So she passed it on to grandmama. Grandmama didn't really go to therapy, didn't really understand the dangers of mental health and trauma. So she didn't really deal with her. So she passed it to mama. Mama passed it to the children. And 9 times out of 10, we're going to pass it to our grandchildren, even if they have not been born yet, because we're passing on through our genes how it's expressed in DNA. But this is the thing that we don't talk about enough as well, coming from our ancestors. So, yes, did Jim Crow impact me, even though I wasn't born in the 1600s and the 1700s? Absolutely, because a lot of that stuff was passed down to us through our genes. Did Jim Crow, did lynching, did the hyper arousal of mothers having the children sold that brought pain and brokenness and trauma on the mother and on the child, the black men slaves, you know, that were beaten down into oppression and watching their wives be raped by the white master and couldn't do anything about it. You know, did that traumatize our black men? Slave? Absolutely. And segregation and discrimination and racism, institutional racism, structural racism, interpersonal racism, colorism in our own community, how yes. dark skin and light skin fight against each other, how the outfield slaves had jealous and envy of the in-house slave. All of this stuff has been passed on. And this is why we still see a lot of those slave-like manifestations, behavior in today's Black culture and community, is because we pass on those things through our DNA. This is the reason why I say what I say in my book. Trauma may not be your fault, but it is your responsibility to heal from trauma, because if you don't, we will bleed on people that didn't cut us. And
let me
that's
cut in
what
in.
We're seeing.
Let me cut in right now. You said something at the beginning, the traumatization of the incarcerated. Crossroads, yes. The show that we're on now,
yeah,
is designed to address the issues of those incarcerated. And yeah. 70% of all black males have a criminal record or have a run-in or brush with the criminal justice system. Yeah. You said earlier that 70% of the world population has been impacted by trauma. Yeah. And then we're dealing with 70% of the black population in America, males. And you're talking about PTSD. We came up with a program called Post-Incarcerated Stress Syndrome, called PISS, P-I-S-S. Yeah. Post, we created that about 10 years ago inside the prison to deal with some of what you're talking about. Because
yeah.
I spent a lot of my time has been spent in prison.
Yeah.
So I've had a firsthand knowledge of seeing people go through all kinds of changes,
yeah.
dealing with their trauma, being getting life sentences, being sent to death row, losing yeah. their parents while they're inside a prison, can't
yeah.
get out,
yeah.
etc. And this program called PISS is similar to what you're talking about in terms of how do we deal with this. But the question I want to ask is, what is it that we can do? Because you just gave us a whole list of stuff from slavery on, and we've been traumatized from the day we were born. The day we yeah. were born, we were traumatized. When they smack you on your bottom and make you holler, you never had a hand touch you until somebody smacked you on your bottom. Then you start hollering and crying. So from day one, we're experiencing trauma and don't understand its impact and what it's doing to us. What is it, Doc, that our community can do to recognize and deal with this issue of trauma in the Black community?
Yeah, so I wrote the book Black Trauma. So, you know, what happens to us? That's on Amazon right now. I strongly advise everyone, all our Black members of our Black community and descendants of Africa and descendants of slaves and indigenous communities to get that book. That book really goes into talking about the impact of slavery, the impact of how that was passed on to us. But it also talks about, you know, solutions. So let me just talk a little bit about Black trauma. So I'll talk about trauma in general. But I think we do need to most definitely unpack. Is there something called Black trauma? Absolutely. Yes, the world has experienced their own traumas. But a lot of times our traumas get whitewashed, and it's really irritating and offensive for them to tell us, y'all haven't gotten over that by now. Y'all still talking about slavery? When do we get to the point we're not talking about slavery no more? Well, we can't get to a place of not talking about it, because when it comes to Black trauma, we have to unapologetically say, even from the medical community and the health community, is that we see the impacts on the bodies and brains of African Americans and descendants of slaves every single day. And we have to be honest. Racism it's not just America's original sin. Racism has been strategically engineered in the DNA of America. Now, I want you to think about what I just said.
Say that again.
Racism has been strategically engineered in the DNA of America. This is the reason why programs, projects, and policies still have a struggle of addressing racism. Because until you get into where you impact the cells of the body cannot heal. We always say, if you can heal the, if you can make the cells well, you can heal, right? You heal the cell, you can get well. Well, I look at America like a body as well. Well, the cells is so toxic with racism from a cellular genetic level. I want you to hear what I'm saying. From a cellular genetic level to where just introducing, you know, little programs and policies, which is a good start, don't get me wrong, but we got to get to the deeper levels of racism. And let's be honest, it is ingrained and infused into the DNA of the country, the DNA of the government, how we function from the beginning of its originality as a country. These things have been strategically engineered into the fabric and DNA of the country from the beginning to, one, do not even validate us as human. You know, and if you don't validate us as human, then you're protected to treat us like anything, because Americans is not considered under the Constitution. All men are created equal. That didn't include descendants of slaves. That didn't include slaves or descendants of slaves, right? Mm-hmm. So Black trauma is real. And I will not allow even Black people to whitewash Black trauma, because we also all kinfolk ain't skin folk too, y'all. So I'll say that right now. Everybody look like us. It's not really for us, right? We do have those Clarence Thomases in our community that really don't represent us, right? So we do have people say, is that that look like us? So like, is really Black trauma? Absolutely, Black trauma is real. But this is the thing that we don't talk about in epigenetics that I think that makes you happy and makes you want to shout on this.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, yes, we do receive trauma through our genes, but guess what we also receive through our genes? The power of resilience. The power of resilience.
Explain what you mean by that.
So my ancestors, who practiced a lot of resiliency through the harshness and the atrocities of slavery, our ancestors also passed on the power of resilience to the Black community. So when people say, how can we have 2 foreclosures and not put a gun to our head and kill ourselves? It's because we have the power of resilience, baby.
I love that. I have not heard that dichotomy. I just hear about trauma. But I love that. And maybe that's why I like hearing about slave revolts and rebellions, and when we fought back and when we resisted, because that shows resilience as well. That shows that all is not lost. That shows that, you know, there's something within us that's still striving, you know, to overcome all of that. So thank you very much for mentioning that. I'm going to start using that one as well, the power of resilience.
Good. So really what I did is spoken to, I created a new framework. I'm sure y'all all heard of trauma-informed care.
Yes.
That's, you know, for us, like 20-something years now, 30-something years in the making. But in my work, I noticed that we need a new framework, especially coming out of COVID. Trauma has been high and things of that nature. So I created a new framework called Trauma Resilient Wellness, which is the TRW framework. And that new framework has 8 pillars to build resilient communities, right? So I got 8 R's. I got recognition, I have resources, I have revolution, how we galvanize communities, I have resilience. So yes, about 8 R's that how we build resilient communities. So it's a new framework that came from me. So I came from a Black doctors. They came from somebody that looked like you. But it's for all communities, but it's also specifically to help communities of color to build community. So in the statement, I says, if we heal the roots, the tree will grow resilient fruit. Beautiful. Want you to think about that.
Yes.
If we heal the roots, right?
Yes.
If we heal the soil and the roots by which the tree grows, the tree will automatically grow resilient fruit. So it is extremely resilient, heavy. So let's define resilience. So resilience is the ability to have a comeback from a major setback. And so for the last 400 years as a people, we have always had so many layers of a setback. That's why still our wealth gap is still huge, from $11,000 from per African-American versus our white counterparts, it's $110,000, right? So going back to those systems, racism is not just a slur or a racial slur. It's way more dangerous and atrocious than that. It's an institution. It's a structure, and it's certainly a system that has been strategically engineered in our country to constantly, deliberately, intentionally, unequivocally to keep African Americans behind the grave, because it is intentional to keep us oppressed, no longer with chains in the cotton fields or no longer in chains and sharecropping, but now in our mindset, now in the ghetto, now in public housing, now on certain programs that keeps us oppressed and marginalized and disenfranchised. This is racism, that racism engineering, and that's what we're not talking about enough. But the thing about we got to understand is that there is resilience in Black people.
Yes,
and it was passed down to us. Our ancestors gave us the power of resilience. So every single time that they have tried to beat us down, we always had the comeback game because resilience was in us.
You know, this is WPFW 89.3 FM, your station for jazz and justice. WPFW is heard around the world. I want to thank everybody for tuning in. You're listening to Trauma in the Black Community with Dr. Damon Holt, traumatologist. Doc, question.
Yes.
What's the connection between poverty and trauma? If somebody's poor and they go through trauma, how does that impact them? And how do they begin to deal with that? Or I think the first thing is to recognize that you have trauma, you're going through trauma. Because in order to deal with a problem, you got to recognize it first. So how does poverty and trauma correlate with each other?
Oh, most definitely. It's a big correlation. So again, so trauma is an emotional wounds and psychological injuries, and it impacts your prefrontal cortex and the frontal lobe. That is where trauma impacts our choices that we make, decisions that we make. And every choice have consequences and repercussions. Well, in communities where there's a lot of poverty, it keeps you also in fight or flight, because, you know, it's hard to teach somebody when their stomach is growling. So I tell teachers, white teachers in particular, all the time, like, why they don't pay attention, you know, why are they jumping around? Well, there's a lot of fight or flight because of a lot of trauma, right? So when you have a lot of trauma in your life, you have a difficulty of learning, you have difficult retaining information and getting the education that you need so that you can pull yourself out of poverty into prosperity too. Again, racism is strategically engineered to marginalize and disenfranchise African Americans from the beginning of birth. So many Black kids already come into the world already with a unfair wealth gap, unfair education. Education is your comeback. It's your way up and it's your way out. Well, if African Americans are not getting a quality education because in their neighborhoods where schools are not getting a lot of tax dollars and funding, that means that they're not getting the high quality of pedagogy from having the best master teachers. We want to make sure we don't have racially biased teachers. So education has a big piece to it. Then usually, let's be honest, individuals or communities that have a lot of areas of poverty also have a lot of crime. So a lot of kids are also getting caught up at early stages in the criminal system, in the school to prison pipeline. Okay. So when you look at the education, because that's your way up and your way out of poverty, is you got to get a quality education. Now, that does not always mean, and I will say that as a doctor, that does not always mean your education has to come from Yale. Mm-hmm. and your education have to come from Princeton, and your education have to come from these Ivy League colleges. But you do need knowledge, because knowledge is power. That is your way up and your way out to get out. Two, you got to also have resources. Many resources are very limited on a intentional basis for African-Americans and people of color. So dealing with these issues and these policies that are set in place, we know that poverty has a big issue in far as people coming up and doing some amazing thing to become successful. So removing those barriers is very traumatic if we don't, and it keeps people impoverished. It keeps people in survival mode, which is coming from trauma and that high cortisol. And sometimes it make you make not the best decisions as well when you're inside survival mode. This is how a lot of people got incarcerated in the first place, because in the hood, you don't have enough food in the hood. So I got to sell drugs, or I got to get my hustle on. I got to do this, I got to do that. And next thing you know, because of a bad decision, you locked up doing 15, 20. Now you have a felony that's going to follow you for the rest of your life. And now you got a barrier that can, you know, not prevent you to be successful, make sure, but most definitely intentionally make it very hard for you to be successful. And then you have a mindset to go back to prison, which is recidivism. So yeah, all of that is tied up and tangled up together.
You know, for folks who are interested to join this discussion, the phone number is 202-588-0893, 588-0893. You can call them for a question or comment. Doc, we talked about, you mentioned something that really lit my fire earlier. You're talking about the traumatization of the incarcerated.
Yeah.
And we know, and you just said it, when you lose your life and freedom, you go to prison and you abandon them, and you abandon your kids, your family, et cetera.
Yeah.
Question, is there any trauma groups or resilient authority you can get to if you're poor, broke, and live in the Black community? How can you get help or assistance to address or deal with the trauma that you're experiencing currently?
Yeah, let me also add into, not only is trauma real in incarceration, but I still don't think we talk enough about grief. I think a lot of our brothers and sisters really suffer from grief, because how we define grief, anytime there's a major change or a major loss, that it wants for grief. It's not just when people pass away. When your life has went through a critical major change, you're supposed to grieve. Well, when you're incarcerated, you're not just suffering from trauma. I believe a lot of incarcerated brothers and sisters are suffering from massive levels of grief. And you don't even get the grief, because by the time you get in prison, you're treated like an animal. Then you got all of the other toxicity that's going on, from violence to threats to gangs to drugs to sexual assaults, all of that. You don't even get to process grief, right? Okay. So it's very, very important that we understand that. But the how is, number one, you got to understand that trauma is an issue for it. Okay. Because I've had patients. As a doctor, I cannot want your healing more than you want it for yourself. So number one, you got to be very honest that you have a problem. You can't just show avoidance or deflect it to other people or other problems, and you don't take ownership and accountability of your own demons, dysfunctions, and your own disorders. If you don't heal from your trauma, you're going to continue to bleed on people that didn't cut you. You're going to bleed on your wife. You're going to bleed on your children. You're going to bleed on your community. And then the thing about it is, when you come out, you're going to be so different, and your brain is going to be so rewired, and you're going to be so dissociative that you may not even be the same brother that when you came out than the one that you came in. So we got to get help.
Let me cut in. We got four or five people on the line running to call in with questions or comments. We'll take our first caller. Question or comment, please, and your name.
This Hello. Is Rick calling you long distance from Germany, man.
Boy, I knew you'd be my first caller. Merry Christmas, Rick.
Merry Christmas, Roach. And I would like to say to the good doctor, trauma is about to go up there in America. Trump is cutting Medicaid, SNAP, as well as school systems and hospitals. If people see no way out, they're going to steal, rob, and kill to survive. And not just for food, but for housing and toilet, for transportation, for wardrobe. I'm done, fellas.
Okay, thanks for calling in, Rick. That's our favorite call. He calls in every month, every week, really, from Munich, Germany. Come on, our second caller. Question or comment, please. You're on air. Second caller.
Hi, Roach.
Hey.
Hi, Roach.
How you doing?
Dr. Chapman, how you doing?
Well, hey, Dr. Chapman, I was just with you yesterday, you turkey. How you doing, Doc?
Okay. You know, there was a book written by Dr. Nathan Hell called The Black Anglo-Saxons. And, you know, part of our problem right now, it seems that we have a so-called enemy within. And to give you a classic example, here in the district, there's talk of spending $1 billion in taxpayer money on a new football stadium when we have homeless people on the streets. We have people who are unemployed. How do you rectify that kind of decision making by black politicians? Don't they exacerbate this trauma within our own communities by not making good choices for the people?
The least of us. Go ahead, Doc. That's a good question, Doc.
That's a good question. So I'll go back to what I just said. All skin folk ain't kin folk. So, you know, we need to stop playing with this. You know, we need to call it out. We need to call it out. You know, so everybody look like us that want to get in these political offices, we need to be holding them accountable. And this is dangerous because as the first caller, what he talked about, you're exactly right. We start having more criminal behavior when trauma is extremely high because it hijacks the frontal lobe. It keeps you in that survival brain. It keeps you in that heightened arousal and hypervigilance. I really believe that's intentional because there's also something in incarceration called private prisons, which means that wealthy investors make money off the back of people who've been incarcerated. So when we began to have certain communities that is high in crime, you know, we arrest them and throw them into these private prisons systems, which is a multi-billion dollar industry. It is not crazy to think that could this really be strategy to be in poor communities and communities of color arresting all kind of black and brown people that we know a lot of them already have felony histories, criminal histories. So it's easy to throw them back in there and where people are making a whole lot of money. You're right. This bill is very dangerous because while people are sleeping on it, they're not going to realize until one day they want to go to the doctor. And over 11 million Americans will not have Medicaid, will not have insurance coverage. You know, touching these entitlement programs, you know, while we are putting more money into the millionaires and the billionaires, America still doesn't get it into their direct situation is impacted by the voters box. So we see this all the time. So, yes. We are in a public health emergency, is what I started out saying. Trauma is America's new public health emergency. If we don't start addressing these traumas in our community, it's going to exacerbate, and we're going to start seeing what I'll call infections. When we don't treat a wound, we start seeing infections. And what the problem with trauma is, we've been given trauma Tylenol and a Motrin, and we should have gave it an antibiotic a long time ago.
Surgery. Right. Yo, surgery. Thank you. We'll take our next caller. We got the phones are jumping off the hook. We'll take our next caller with a question or comment, please, and your name. You're on the air.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes. Come on.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes. Come on.
Okay. Yeah. I just want to ask you a question about I'm a 77-year-old chemical technician. I've worked with the water system and the district and other cities for years and years and years. I strongly believe until we address the fact that the heavy metals that our children, our people, black people, our children ingested in the school systems, in the district, they for years and years and years. And you know, you're a doctor, the the disadvantages of ingesting heavy metals in the water and what they can do to our growth and our mental confidence. And I have talked with people, and I'm sure people don't want to take it up because of the cost involved, lawsuits, et cetera. Could you address that, please? Heavy metals have affected our children in the inner city. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you for calling. Go ahead, Doc.
Yes. So I resonate that personally, not just professionally. I'm born and raised Flint, Michigan. So we had a lot of metals and lead in our water. So it's not just heavy metals that are impacting our kids, but a lot of kids have been impacted by lead being in their water. So I'm from Flint, Michigan. So you guys have heard from 2014, a revelation that we were drinking from polluted Flint River instead of getting our water from Detroit. And we know Flint, especially when I came, especially in the 90s, it was like murder capital. So behaviors and crime was all over the place. And that most definitely impact the brain and body of individuals and can create early signs of different chronic diseases and inflammation and all of those different things that comes from heavy metals. So you're exactly right. So lead as well is something we have to strongly consider sometimes in some of these cities that we're not watching. I think there was a city in Mississippi that also had polluted water. So we have American cities that's usually in areas of poor communities and communities of color that's not getting quality water, and most definitely, lead can follow you for the rest of your life, being in your system and your bloodstream. So, and heavy metals, exactly. So, yes. Yeah, so,
okay, we'll take our last caller. We got 5 minutes to go. We'll take our last caller. Question or comment, please. You're on the air.
All right. Good morning, Roach Brown, Martin, the doctor, Nikichi.
Yes.
This is Sister Rhodesia Mason calling in. My question, and I want to make sure I phrase this right. Doctor, can you tell me what category would you have domestic violence in that's very prevalent in the African-American community? How would you categorize that from a trauma standpoint, and what solutions? Because I believe that I'm going to focus on the African-American men and men of color learned that back in slavery by watching our ancestors learned it by observing, like you said earlier, and I like the way you articulated that, watching the masters rape the women. And I used to discuss this, people thought I was crazy. I think it started as a generational curse that started when this country and our people were enslaved by the white America. And this is systemically in our country. But my question, let me slow down, would be how would you categorize the high rate of domestic violence and abuse that's inflicted upon mainly African-American women and women of color in this country? Is that, how would you, because it is traumatizing.
Okay.
My mother goes through that. How would you?
Just let the doctor answer. Just let him answer.
What's some of the solutions? Thank you.
Yes. Yes, so that's a big link to violence, period. So in my book, Hurting People Hurt People is exactly that. Hurting people hurt people. So when you've been exposed to high levels of violence, it impacts the brain. When men have been exposed, high exposures have been high in regards to seeing violence, whether that's violence in the hood, carjackings, murder, or domestic violence, seeing a husband or baby daddy or some live-in boyfriend beat up on the mom. If that child does not really deal with those traumas, he have a higher probability of repeating a lot of those behaviors. This is where it begins to be generational. And this is why I said, if we don't heal from our traumas, we will bleed on others, which means that usually that young man has been exposed to high levels of violence and never got any healing or addressed those traumas, he's going to repeat those behaviors on his wife and then the son. And so it becomes generational. The how is we have to, in the Black community, stop being afraid of addressing mental health. We have to normalize mental health. And let me tell you something else for free, and then I'm not going to charge you for this one. What goes on in my house stays in my house, looks good on a website, but is one of the worst advice to ever give a black person. Because if you're getting abused by your uncle and you're not telling nobody, then Thanksgiving, 4th of July, and Christmas dinners is a traumatic experience, because we're putting you next to the same perpetrator that's violating you and putting you in that same space. So what goes on in my house stays in my house is the reason why we got a lot of depression, and we also have a lot of suicide ideation, because people are dealing with these disorders and dysfunctions and these abuses that's been impacting us for a long time. And I always said, as Frederick Douglass said, it is far easier to build strong children than to repair broken men. The quicker we can help build these children and keep them healthy and protect them, the better their adulthood is going to be.
Okay. We have about 2-3 minutes. Doc, Nikichi, you got a things you want to say? Then, Doc, I'd like for you to close out and give a contact information on how our listeners can contact you.
Yeah, so I am a national speaker. So if you want somebody that's dope, prolific, comprehensive, educated, that know his stuff, that I can articulate from a scholarly level, but also articulate from a hood level, I'm a nerd and I'm educated and I'm hood. I'm all of that all in one. And if you want that, have me to come to your event. Have me to be your keynote speaker. Have me to do a 2 or 3 day workshop, you know, at your church, at your organization, at all of that. So reach me. My number is area code 520-280-1079. That's 280-1079. My email is my first name, damondholt.com. Say that again. It should be damond@damondholt.com. Last, I give you my website, which is www.traumaresilientwellness.com. traumaresilientwellness.com. My books is on Amazon, so get those books. Black Traumas there. Trauma is a New Public Health Emergency in Education. If you're a teacher, a counselor, a principal, you want to get that book. Hurting People Hurt People. You've been through some major deep traumas in your life. That book is going to be helpful for you. Leading While Bleeding. If you're a leader and you're overcome by burnout and stress, whether you're a CEO, a superintendent, or a pastor of a church, you want to get that book as well. So go with those books. Happy to come on out. I'm always coming to the DC area because we got the new movement of healing in the Baltimore and DC area. So happy to come on out to your event. Love to speak truth and bring the movement of healing to your location.
Thank you. Our guest has been Dr. Damond Holt. Our topic has been trauma in the Black community. And believe me, I've learned a lot this morning in terms of how we are, particularly the traumatization of the incarcerated, because all of us incarcerated, whether we're in prison, society is on a bigger, larger prison. So all the things we go through impacts us. I want to thank our co-host, Nikichi Taifa. Boy, she's something else. Thank you for calling in, Nikichi. We got to stay tuned for our next hour. We have another topic about the amputation crisis in the Black community, how amputation is on the rise. See, like everything we talk about is a crisis, man, when it comes to us. So I want to thank you for listening to our show with Dr. Damond Holt. Stay tuned for the next hour. We come to you 2 hours on the first Tuesday. We are coming live from the world-famous Ben's Chili Bowl here on historic U Street. Stay tuned for the next hour. This is Roach Brown, Nikichi Taifa, and my wife, Mertine. And I want to say hello to Mike Nasella and Mo Thomas, our engineers and technicians. Boy, they keep us coming, keeping us hot, live, and aware. Thank you for listening, and thank all our callers who call in. Stay tuned for the next hour on Crossroads. Thank you.
No more back thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war, and poverty. Oh, oh, oh. Wake up, all the teachers, time to teach a new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children to jump the very best you can, the world won't get no better.
just let it be. Na 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 na. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it now, just you and me. Wake up all the doctors, make the old people well. They're the ones who suffer and who catch all the hair. But they don't have so very long before their judgment day. So won't you make them happy before they pass away? Wake up all the builders, time to build a new land. I know we could do it if we all lend a hand. The only thing we have to do is put it in our minds. Surely things will work out. They do it every time.
The Birchmere presents Omar, July 17th. Hubert Laws, July 20th. Hiroshima, July 24th. And Sheila E., July 30th. Details at thebirchmere.com.
While Medgarvis and Patrice Lumumba were not personally acquainted, their lives and struggles are often commemorated together due to the parallels in their commitment to fighting for the self-determination and liberation of African people. WPFW celebrates the centennial of this parallel vision with From Mississippi to the Congo, 100 Years of Lumumba and Medgar, Wednesday, July 2nd, noon until midnight on WPFW. Building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
This July 4th, WPFW presents Higher, the poetic genius of Sekou Sundiata and the musical innovation of Sly Stone. From 9 a.m. until 7 p.m., we begin at 11 a.m. with an airing of Sekou Sundiata's 51st Dream State, a multimedia meditation on empire. At 1 p.m., our multifaceted exploration of Sly Stone kicks off until 7 p.m. with tributes curated by Brother Jamil, James Funk, and DJ Lance Reynolds. Full schedule at WPFWFM.org. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Wondering how to get WPFW swag in your life? Items that say, I support Jazz and Justice without saying a word. We've got you covered. Details and browsing at WPFWFM.org. Again, that's WPFWFM.org.
Greetings. This is Papa Wabe inviting you to check out my new showgram, Free Your Mind with Papa Wabe, every Thursday morning from 2 to 5 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. We present a mashup of positive, uplifting music of different genres, mainly roots reggae. We also feature poetry, speeches, artist interviews, and so much more. That's Free Your Mind with Papa Wabe, Thursday mornings, 2 to 5 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, here on WPFW 89.3 FM, making it a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Free your mind!
We are going to march to the White House, and we are going to deliver a message. Trump must go now.
This 4th of July, refusefascism.org is saying, don't celebrate Trump's fascist America. Protest. Don't barbecue with family. While immigrant families are being ripped apart, troops are in the streets, elected officials are being threatened and arrested, and fascism is advancing. No, the lesson of history is that fascism must be defeated before it becomes too late. That is why on July 4th, at 2 p.m. at Logan Circle, refusefascism.org will rally and then march to the White House to declare independence from Trump's fascist America in the name of humanity. Then, right in front of the White House, they will raise the biggest chant heard round the world.
Trump must go now!
Trump must go now!
details and to get involved, refusefascism.org.
The Youth Resiliency Institute's annual Cherry Hill Arts and Music Waterfront Festival is back on Friday, July 4th, 1 until 10 p.m. at Middle Branch Park in Baltimore. Music, food trucks, children's activities, vendors, art exhibition, and more in celebration of the 15th anniversary of the Youth Resiliency Institute. Performers include Navasha Dea, Cecily, DJ Grin, and Fusion Orchestra, and more. Details at cherryhillfest.com or 443-813-2116. WPFW, Building a Better World.